Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to a brand new edition of Pod by the Bay, proudly presented by the Bay Area Examiner. I'm your host, Nathan Bond. Joining alongside me, Seth Barnador and Robert Stee. Fellas, a lot to get to this evening as we record on portal opening day. That is Tuesday, April 16th, 2024. The portal will be open for 15 days. We've already seen some USF players enter the portal. Best of luck to you. And we'll get to that. But all three of us, we were at the spring game on Saturday.
Technically all four of us.
And yeah, and Vito, who will
edit this
later and post it out to the world. All four of us were in the same place at the same time, maybe for the first time since we came up with the Bay Area Examiner.
Yeah, so it's been a hot minute.
It's been quite a while.
Very possible. Yes.
So it was great to see you guys. There was an alleged football game-ish sort of thing that happened on Saturday as well inside Corbett Stadium. the white team won? Green team? Someone won 10-7. I know that. There was a great pitch and catch from Izzy Carter to Christian Helms. There was a great trick play on the first play of, I think, the green teams. White teams, someone's offensive possession, flea flicker, Sean Atkins, of course, to Kelly Joyner for the touchdown. And then that's basically it. It was a slog. These split squad spring practice games can get a little dicey, a little hairy. Was there anything, and I mean, like, even a modicum of intelligence that you guys picked up from the spring game on Saturday? And I'll open the floor. Whoever wants to jump in first, by all means.
See, how much did you watch? Did you get a good chance to watch?
I watched two plays happen live in between everything else that was happening. So I'll preface this by, this was the worst spring game that I've ever watched. The two plays that I watched, Kawan Powell got hurt and got carted off the field. And Andrew Stokes, God help him, shanked the fuck out of a ball on a punt. On a punt with no pass rush, by the way. No pass rush. And just, you know, I saw the vision. I saw what he was trying to do because he was doing it. He's been doing it since he got here, trying to angle it towards the sideline. I think it hit the press box. That's all I saw. Terrible spring game.
Yeah, I mean, to me, it was a normal spring game for the most part. Interesting things, I thought. Jalen Schuler, I thought, looked really good. I think he led the team in tackles, or led the game in tackles. He was kind of all over the field. Kawan Banks, another guy, transferred from South Carolina, I thought looked really good, playing the kind of a nickel position. I would guess he's the starting nickel right now, would be my guess. And then another name that kind of, or another guy that flashed, Tavin Ward was playing safety, not playing corner like he ended last season. He was playing safety and did a really good job a few times, just flying downhill from the safety spot and making tackles right at the line of scrimmage. Mm-hmm. So that was encouraging. I thought the tackling overall was better, so that was somewhat encouraging as well. You know, guys, offensively, there wasn't a ton going on. I think, you know, the way their quarterbacks play, these type of situations don't help, especially with how the lines were constituted, where it's not like first team, second team. It's kind of a mix, right. So there's like not a ton of familiarity probably among the line. So that hurts the quarterbacks, but like Izzy Carter took off a few times, they blew it dead. I don't know if in a live game situation, if he's actually down. So it's a little bit slanted in the defense's favor. Izzy can really spin it. I think his height gives him problems sometimes. But if like it's a real game situation where he can take off and run, I think he can be pretty dangerous. Let's see what else was there's. Oh, I thought Jaquan Smith looked pretty fast. Winton looked pretty good, just running. I thought a lot of the freshman receivers looked. That's kind of like to me. These are fun to see how people just like Josh Porter. I think even just see how guys move.
Right.
Live, you can kind of see, okay, this guy. And there's a few times where Jaquan Smith just blew by some people downfield, but the protection wasn't there long enough or the quarterback was looking somewhere else. And so, you know, he didn't get a ton of targets, but there are times where he just roasted some people off the line of scrimmage and was open and the ball didn't go his way. So I think – and he also played outside a little bit at times too. So that was an interesting – we thought he was kind of exclusively a slot, but with Jaden Lex's injury, maybe that bumps him outside. So there are some things to glean. There was not a ton, but there was some information out there, and it's always just good to be able to see some of these guys, especially young guys, see them live, see how they move, and you can kind of get a little bit of an idea how they play. Rodney Hill is like a Rodney Hill is like a fire hydrant at linebacker.
Yeah, he's like I think he's listed at 5'10". God bless him if he is. Let me take a look.
What's listed on the roster at 210? But I swear the roster they gave us there said it was like 225 or something like that.
Yeah, it said it says 5'10", 210. He may be 5'9 and a half, 225. He's like the guy stout. Is freaking
he is stout. Yeah.
Oh my god, he's a chode.
He was moving out there though. He was but he's looking at this guy like, oh my lord, that guy's just like he's not very big, but he's
you mentioned like seeing guys like in person, like kind of moving around. You mentioned Izzy Carter, some of those. Like, if it was real, if the game was actually happening, he's probably not down. He gets to top end speed very, very quickly. Like,
yes,
surprisingly quick. Like, we knew he was fast. We knew he could spin the ball, but seeing it in person, that kind of jumped off the page for me a little bit. What he was able to do. Also, Rico Watson. I don't know if it was just the matchup. He got off the line of scrimmage very, very quickly as well from the defensive end position. He's a Florida State and then JUCO transfer. Had to sit out last year. That was him, right? Or was that? I think they both had to sit out.
He was at Robert Morris.
Him and Bernard Gooden both had to sit out. I think those two will be beneficial. I liked what I saw from him. I liked what I saw from Banks, as you mentioned. Outside of that, it's really, really hard to tell. It's fine. I'm not really taking too much from the spring game. I did notice the first few possessions with Byram's side, they did go out in 10 personnel quite a bit. Asked Golish about it, and he said, well, the tight ends are just kind of really banged up. Jonathan Echols didn't play, Weston Wolf didn't play. So it was just more of a by necessity thing. But he also did expand on that and saying, well, we didn't have that in our arsenal last season. So it's nice to know if something like this does happen, we can go four wide receivers and not really see a significant drop off in talent in execution. I think, and Seth, we've kind of talked about this since the season's ended. I think we're going to see a lot more of that.
It certainly seemed like early in the spring, one of his press conferences, he started talking about all the guys that have in the slot that can play. And he kind of alluded to, we're going to do some different things with them, try to get as many of those guys on the field as we can. Well, how can you do that? You can play with four receivers more often. So now I don't know how Jaden Alexis going down would affect that. But they have enough bodies, I think, that can play there, that if they want to roll that out every now and then, they can. And that could be a nice little wrinkle to throw at people and really get, you know, talk about like really light run boxes. Like you're going to have to take a lot of people out of the box to play out there. So I like it. It's something I was like, there were times last year, I'm like, why don't we see more of that? But with their pace, you know, if you don't have the depth there, it's hard to just throw guys out there a ton and just roll. But if you have a little more depth there this year, which I think they do. And that was kind of the other thing. We talked to some people around the program this portal period, which I think we're gonna get to, they feel is a lot more of a luxury take period than last year. So they feel pretty good about where they are depth wise on this team at most positions. And you saw that where you had a bunch of guys out, but you still had, you know, guys getting in played, and there wasn't, you know, there was some drop off from some of the, you know, main guys, but there were still like defensive line. You had a few guys out, rushers, like some of your rushers out, some of your big guys in the middle out, and you still had guys in there that looked like they could play. So that's a welcome change from previous years.
Absolutely. And it, you kind of touched on the portal. Steve, you've been kind of keeping track of this in the Discord and the Ponderosa section. You've been kind of keeping tabs on all the guys. Who are some of the guys since the portals opened and, you know, the exit meetings, the, you know, the exit interviews were held on Monday that started at 8 a.m. Monday morning. So, you know, everybody's kind of talked to the coaching staff to see what they're going to be doing in the summer. Who's entered the portal for the Bulls, and anyone of note that you think people should kind of be aware of?
Yeah, that was actually the main joke that I had from the spring game was we knew when exit interviews were going to start is Monday at 8 a.m. To start, Drew Perez entered the portal first. Gerard Ademo shortly thereafter him. Junior Azebu. His is official. Let's see who else. Choffrey Brown officially entered the portal. And then Keon Terrell has officially entered the portal. So three offensive linemen, a tight end, and then a wide receiver. Nothing too surprising there. We have some pretty good ideas of some additional guys that will be entering the portal. That's for the Ponderosa. Little hint, hint, nudge, nudge. But there's also a really good chance that it'll be official by the time that this podcast comes out tomorrow morning. So. Overall, nothing too out of the ordinary. I mean, three guys that were from the transition class, or excuse me, two guys that were from the transition class, one guy that just had to switch back and forth between offensive line and defensive line. Choffrey Brown, speedy, but just couldn't reel it in at times. You know, nothing out of the ordinary. I think Junior Azebu is the only one who you'd be like, you'd give a little pause to. He joined in the spring and then left in the spring. So you kind of stopped for a second, but nothing noteworthy, nothing statistics wise that you can't already replace or already have replaced, frankly. So there's still a little bit over the scholarship count by our counts at this point. So probably a little bit more attrition. Again, I can't see them sans one position really kind of go after anyone into the portal. I mean, this spring transfer portal period is just, it's such a bad like group of baggage that you probably don't want to get involved with too much across the board. But we'll see if anything comes from it at this point.
Yeah, it's definitely changed. And Seth, you can correct me if I'm wrong here. Over maybe the last 2-3 years, maybe even a little bit longer, the spring portal season, the spring transfers has definitely taken on more of a negative connotation, slanted against the players. It's more of like the old school, like, oh, he's transferring. There must be a reason why he's transferring sort of thing, instead of the after the full season transfer portal where it's like, let me just see what's going on.
I don't know. I kind of disagree a little bit. I think there is some of that for sure. And you definitely see guys that, and I heard Bud Elliott talking about, you know, people playing games with their spring game depth charts to like try to get guys to hang around that are like, oh, you're going to run with the ones, but you're really not a one. Cause I think Alabama had like the transfer from Washington running with like their fourth team, the quarterback. And it's like, you're not really the fourth team quarterback. Like, we're trying to appease the other two guys that we want to keep around. So, but I do think there is some of that where guys are obviously get buried on the depth chart and leave. There's also like, it seemed like the rumor been going around for like a month now is that, or maybe even longer, is that a lot of the big teams with money need defensive linemen. So all of a sudden, you're seeing a lot of defensive linemen jump in the portal. Right. So I think there is a little bit of guys losing jobs, but there's also teams kind of being able to assess after spring and kind of understanding, okay, what do we need? Where do we have money to spend? And then guys, I'm sure there's tampering and back channeling. So there are some guys that get in the portal with, I think, an idea of, hey, this position, like receiver, I think is another one that people with money are looking to get. So you're right. Seeing some pretty decent receivers jump in. So there is some of that always that, hey, I don't like my spot on the roster. But I think there's also a little bit of guys kind of waiting and playing the market out a little bit and waiting for the second period where you may kind of find people a little more desperate, especially after, you know, like let's use USF as an example. Let's say they were really desperate for a tackle and they bring in Azubu. All right, have we decided how we want to pronounce it?
I have not.
Junior, they bring in Junior, and then all right, so he's already back in the portal. So for whatever reason, and we may discuss it later on the bonus. But whatever reason, they decide, well, we really need a tackle now. This one we brought in, it's not worked out for whatever reason. So now they might have to pay a premium to get another tackle because there's a little bit more desperation. Now, that's not the case at USF. I'm just using that as an example. but you can see some of that too. So I do think there is a little bit of the depth chart, you know, guys just trying to run from competition, quote unquote, avoiding the depth chart. But there's also, right. there is also a group of guys that is trying to take advantage of what, like, kind of the weakness in the big teams that kind of play in the market a little bit to maximize their NIL potential.
I feel pretty confident in saying this. Any of the guys that have hit the portal for USF do not fall into that category.
No, that's that they are in the latter, the depth chart. or the former. Yes.
And we'll kind of get it more into maybe some of the specifics of some of these transfer outs, the portalings on USF side in the Ponderosa that we will be recording a little bit later. But yeah, it's safe to say that is not the case. I was told over the weekend, if the guy is entering the portal, they're fine. They'll be okay. The team's still okay. I don't think we're going to see any surprising, portalings, after, you know, this week or in the next 15 days, we're not going to see an Izzy Carter situation where that kind of comes out of left field. But then he comes home. But outside of that, I think we're all right. Flipping to the other major sport in the transfer portal season, men's basketball. A couple of guys have found new homes. Former Bull, Chris Youngblood, heading back home to Tuscaloosa. Leveling up mightily to go play for Alabama. That's a transfer situation where I don't mind. If you level up that much, by God, go get it.
First reported by the Bay Area Examiner, or first posited by the Bay Area.
first hypothesized.
Must credit. Pod by the Bay. Bay Area Examiner
has to.
Absolutely. And then Selton Miguel on Tuesday. Announced via Instagram that he will be transferring to Maryland. Another one you kind of get. I mean, Big Ten basketball is Big Ten basketball. And I always have to remember that Maryland is still in the Big Ten.
I believe that I would think they have money too.
Oh, I would assume so. I mean, the fighting Steve Blakes, bro, of course they do.
Right, you seen those uniforms?
Juan Dixon is not walking.
Yeah. Wasn't it Juan Dixon and Steve Blake who won the national championship for them?
Yeah.
Or was Jameer Nelson a Maryland guy?
No, he was a St. Joe's.
St. Joe's. Mm. Right. We'll talk about St. John's in the Ponderosa.
that laugh. take a second to recollect, Nathan. You're okay.
So those two have announced. Cason Pryor still floating around. They did get one guy signed, the center from Cincinnati.
Mm-hmm.
Gun in my head, couldn't tell you his name right now.
Jameel Reynolds.
There it is.
Thank you.
Former UCF and
Temple.
Temple.
Yeah. He just really wanted to stay in the American. He was like, oh, God, you guys left? Like, he's at Cincinnati. He's like, you guys left the American? No, I wanted to play.
My God. I didn't realize.
He's patriotic.
Yeah. Unlike Cincinnati. So there's one head coach, Amir Abdur-Rahim, pretty vocal on Twitter over the last couple of days, either telling people to stop being Sergeant No Fun or telling people to relax, telling other coaches stop trying to push my players when you overlook them, and also general read. Yeah.
I gotta say, that timing on that tweet couldn't have been worse, by the way. His whole, which he's absolutely correct. Coaches that overlooked a player when they were being recruited out of high school should not be making a phone call a year later when you see their potential in college and say, hey, what are you guys doing? We'll talk more about that in Ponderosa. But terrible timing, because a bunch of Maryland fans think that that was about Selton Miguel. It was like, oh, no, buddy. No, yeah. Very wrong. You are very wrong there.
Nope. But there is a very positive thing that happened on Tuesday. Former University of Florida Gators standout, Mos Bates, come to Tampa. Coming home as the director of player personnel. That's, I'm not mistaken. First reported by, I believe it was by Field of 68. Who's that guy? Is it not?
Jeff Goodman.
Jeff Goodman. Goodman Hoops. Reporting that. I can confidently, because it's been a year, I'll say this on the pod by the bay. Mos Bates was very interested in the head coaching position last year and was told by people close to the Bay Area Examiner, hey, you need to like coach at the college level before you're going to get a serious look. So he went to Georgia Southern for a year, and now he's back home. I think this is going to be a good stepping stone. I think the relationship that he has in the Tampa Bay area is going to go a long way. Not Carter Knox long way, but like there's still going to be some talent in Tampa. There's going to be the random four and a half, three and a half star guy that they can get. The hoop scene in Tampa is mid, to put it respectfully. It's gone downhill. I'll step on to that limb and say just basketball in general has been so specialized, AAU-ized compared. Like it's where like the 7-on-7 is going to go. Like 7-on-7 is pretty close in football, but they're still lagging way behind what AAU has done to high school basketball. It was the portal. It was NIL before that was even a thing, just at the high school level. So it'll be nice to have somebody with some Tampa connections, Tampa area, just to at least have a shot at some of these guys as well.
And not just Tampa, really. I mean, it's around the state of Florida too.
Yeah.
I mean, his reach, I mean, it's massive just because he was in that AAU sphere for so long that, you know, when we were kicking names around, it was like, you know, you can probably go a pretty similar route to another school in the conference if you hire this guy as your head coach. You know, he doesn't have the experience yet as a collegiate head coach, but you might want to try to get him involved as soon as possible. And now here we are. So once again, the Bay Area Examiner finds a coach that USF was going to hire. USF didn't hire them, and then they come in a year later. So
that's like never four.
Yeah, we're disgustingly good at it. It's actually kind of concerning, based off of some of the conversations I've had.
Search firm.
We'd be so much cheaper. Honest to God, we'd be so much cheaper. Yeah. Michael, hit us up.
We'd be more fun too.
We honestly would.
It would be a lot. I would imagine it would be a lot more fun.
Oh, I would send a. So you guys ready to find out who the new USF head baseball basketball coach is or anything like that? I'd send that out every time, every week.
Every single time. Let's see. Anything else more exciting? Portal closes April 30th. So there's that.
Women's golf is doing well. Very
six,
well.
Six shot lead in the AAC conference tournament over, I believe it's SMU right now. Or is it Tulsa?
Yeah, it's Tulsa.
Tulsa?
Yeah.
So I think they're at 18 under, and Tulsa's at 12. Melanie Green, I don't know if you guys have ever heard of her, kind of turned it on today. I think she went par, birdie, 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 eagle to kind of set the pace for the Bulls. She's really freaking good. And it's going to be a shame when she leaves. But kudos to what, again, head coach Erica Brennan and that staff has done. That was a floundering program. And they turned around and they have a very good shot at winning a conference title, which,
yeah,
God bless. I'm not entirely sure that's ever happened at USF, or it hasn't happened at USF in a very long time for women's golf.
I got texted that. The Google says it was 2011, the last time it happened. I don't think that's right.
That doesn't seem that, no.
It's got to be like 1937.
It has to be.
Yeah. I think the only other kind of really notable, like big notable.
It could have been with like, I think Ashley, I think her name is Ashley Zegers or something like that. On the golf team, she was pretty good, so there's that. But
here, I can figure it out.
Dead air.
Track, men's track and field still ranked in the top 10. That's cool. That's
that number six, right?
Yeah, number six. And that was after kind of like I'm going to theoretically call an off week, but was actually an off week where they didn't really like compete to their top standards just because it was a whatever kind of meet. So yeah, they're doing good. Softball's doing well.
Mm-hmm.
Baseball's doing pretty all right. They're losing right now, but it's midweek baseball, and midweek baseball doesn't matter.
2011, 2012, they won the Big East Championship. So what, 13 years ago?
It was 2011? There's no way.
Yeah, they won the Big East. And then, yeah, that makes a lot of sense because they were actually halfway good. Ashley Burke, I think. Oh, that was after. Christina Miller won the Big East Golfer of the Year 2012. Marcy Cornegate won Coach of the Year in Big East 2010-2012. So, yeah, they were halfway decent. They had three all-conference players in 2012, and then it just fell off a freaking cliff after that. So, yeah. So we're careening toward back-to-back regional NCAA tournament appearances as a team. It'd be three straight years for Melanie Green if the Bulls make the NCAA tournament that she's been in it. That's the first time that's happened since a four-year run, 1999 to 2002, where they made a decent run. So it's been quite a while. So good job by them. I think I said after last season, I was shocked that Erica Brennan was still here. Another run like this, like they're going to have to pony up to keep her around. I think she's too good of a golf coach. She's too good of a program builder and culture builder to stick around if she's not getting paid. What she walked into was an absolute tire fire. So kudos to Michael Kelly for the no, I think it was Harlan. Ugh, I don't want to give him credit for that.
Ugh. No, don't do it.
I think it might be. I don't know. I don't know. Those times are kind of blurring together. But kudos to Michael Kelly, giving her the time to build it up and kind of taking off. So that's it really for this edition of Pod by the Bay. Unless you guys have any final thoughts, words of wisdom.
I do not.
All's good right now. Can't really complain about anything. Oh, I can actually.
I'll do it.
Ooh, men's tennis.
Oh, here we go.
Oof. Ooh, had a bad end to their season. Lost six in a row. Started off kind of bad. Picked it up a good bit. Got to 9-9 on the season, and then just careened towards the end. Given they had a tough end of the year, with I think every team that they played was like ranked in the top 60 of the CTN rankings. But yeah, I can complain about that.
Perfect. Well, I think they just traveled. They're heading to their conference tournament here. I think they traveled this week, if I'm not mistaken. Let me pull that up. Yeah, starts Thursday versus UAB at Tulsa. Yeah, they lost. Golly.
Yeah. And it was a lot of like 4-3s too, which is the worst part.
Yeah. Number 14 San Diego, 26 Princeton, 55 Liberty, 41 BCU, lost 4-3 to Wichita, lost 4-2 to Tulsa, lost 4-2 to number 46 FAU. So woof.
They've got a good class coming in for next year, but yeah. And Alvin Tudorica still might make a sing. Actually, no, he did. He is going to compete in the singles for men's. And I think him and Eric Grevelius are going to be competing in doubles for the NCAA tournament. But USF as a team will not.
Makes sense.
Yeah,
yeah, that's a bad beat. But such is life. We keep pushing.
I'm the only one that keeps track of it. So.
Yeah, I think it's just you and Ashley Fisher at this point.
Yeah. you know, I'm just tweeting at him angrily every week. What are you doing, coach?
Yeah,
that's my complaint. That's the only complaint we can have right now. Everything else is okay. Cool.
That's not too bad. All right. With that, thanks for tuning in. Thanks for listening to another edition of Pod by the Bay, proudly presented by the Bay Area Examiner. Be nice. Go Bulls.
Go Bulls.
Go Bulls.